In just a few short weeks, Anthology Together is bringing you the best of ed tech at the Walt Disney World Swan and Dolphin Resort in Orlando, Florida. Join the global education community to hear about what's next in the future of learning, get a firsthand look at the latest innovations, and discover new insights to help both your institution and students achieve their goals. The future of learning is here, and there's no better place to see it than at Anthology Together 2022. The event kicks off on July 11th, so register today at www.anthology.com/together. Employers need highly qualified and diverse talent to grow. Unmuddle is a marketplace to help you with workforce and upskill needs. To learn more, go to unmuddle.com/employers. That's UNMUDL.com/employers. Welcome back, everybody. It's your time to ed up on the Ed Up Experience podcast, where we make education your business. Dr. Joe Sallustio here with you again and again, closing in on 450 times or so. And every single time I do it, this podcast and host this podcast is just as interesting as the first time, because I get to connect with amazing people who are basically changing the way we think about work in higher education and employment, and are really reshaping what the future is going to look like. And I've got one of those folks with me here today. He is all over it, and here he is. I'm going to just bring him in. He is executive director of the National Association of Colleges and Employers. His name is Sean Vanderzeel. Sean, how are you?
Hey, Joe. It's great to be here. I'm great.
Thanks for coming. By the way, did you know you were going to get an applause today?
I had no idea. That's brilliant.
Well, it's, you know what, I'm sure this happens at home for you every time you walk into the room, but I thought I would try to replicate that for you. How are things going?
Everything's going great. Thanks.
Well, tell me about, let's talk about the National Association of Colleges and Employers, better known as NACE. Let's assume we have somebody who's listening today that has never heard of NACE. Level set for us. What do you guys do and how do you do it?
Yeah, so NACE empowers and connects the community of professionals who support, develop, and employ the college-educated workforce. Let me break that down for you. So we represent over 14,000 individual members from over 3,000 organizations. About two-thirds of those members work on college campuses in career services and career development primarily. The other one-third of our membership are recruiters. They are the folks who go onto college campuses every day to recruit new talent for their companies. The colleges and universities that we represent are the full breadth of colleges and universities, from two-year to four-year, private, public, for-profit, nonprofit. And the employers also run the gamut from small, medium, large, nonprofit, for-profit, but they tend to skew towards the larger side. The average employer is somewhere in the 7 to 10,000 employee range and represent mostly big brands that you're very well familiar with.
Mm. Okay, so lots of scope. And so let's just dive in here, because, boy, I've been waiting to talk to you. And I think this, you know, in higher education, we get these, I don't know, waves of rhetoric around, you know, college being a value and, you know, nobody can find jobs and are employers happy with college educated workers and the skills that they're coming out of college with or not? And how are they advising? There's just a lot in that whole conversation. And I'm sure that's at the center of many of the things you guys are talking about and doing. How are employers feeling about the college-educated worker in general? Are they seeing that these people are coming out with the skills they need in the workforce to succeed in the workforce today? Or do colleges and universities need to entrench and figure out how to better offer the skills of the future?
Great question. The short answer would be yes, they're finding the talent that they need. However, there's a longer explanation that needs to go behind it, which is they certainly see a skills or competency gap that they're hoping that higher education will work with them to close. So at NACE, we have something called the career competencies that we work on that are widely adopted across college campuses around the US. And we study these competencies to help understand how well students are obtaining these competencies and where the gaps may be with employers. And we have 8 of those. What I can tell you is from our surveying that employers basically say there's a pretty significant gap in almost every one of those competencies, except for technology. So employers tend to rate the students higher in technology than the students rate themselves. And of course, students coming out of school are rating themselves pretty favorably related to each of the competencies, but the employers are saying, oh, wait a minute, you're not quite as competent as we would like you to be. I would also add on that sometimes I wonder whether or not it's truly that they lack the competency or skill, or that they lack the ability to identify the competency and skill that they've already achieved and lack the ability to articulate back in a meaningful way to employers that they actually have obtained it.
Wow, that's an interesting point that you make. And I'm thinking about technology, how students rate them, how they're more readiness, right? They're more, what's the word I'm looking for? Proficient.
More ready.
Technology. Rate themselves, and maybe not as proficient in the other skills. Is that because they're so proficient in technology that they're forgetting that human interactive skills? Because there's this whole soft skills conversation, Sean. And I was going to ask you, what do you guys call soft skills over at NACE? Because it's, you know, everybody's got their new terms for what they are, their success skills or power skills or workplace competency skills. And it's these particular skills that seem to be really in demand right now. And a lot of companies, at least in the conversations I've had with the college presidents or company CEOs and VPs themselves, are not everybody's got these skills to the level that they need them.
Yeah, so I would certainly characterize many of them as essential skills because they are essential both to the world at large as well as to the world of work. But they include things like when you dig down deep, like what are these things that we're talking about that maybe they're not quite as proficient at, or if they're, maybe they are proficient, but they lack the ability to communicate about it or identify it. And those would be things like teamwork. They could be written and verbal communication skills. They may be things that are a little harder. So they may be analytical skills or problem solving skills. And these are the things that make up the competencies that employers are really looking to.
Yeah. So essential skills, is that the way you categorize them?
That's how I would categorize it. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's important. And, you know, the battle for talent right now, you know, I've had some folks on who work at like Fortune 500 companies and they're hiring people and they're saying, you know what, we cannot find great people. And when we do find them, we have to put so much energy into retaining them because there just aren't as many people that want to work right now. What are your career services folks saying, your membership in NACE? Are they finding people jobs? Are they, you know, are there more jobs to go around? Is it tough? I mean, what's the landscape like to just find work right now?
So maybe it'd be helpful for me to tell you a little bit about what our employers have told us in our research. So this graduating class of 2022, we're expecting there to be 32% and a 32% increase in hiring over
Amazing.
The class, pretty incredible, over the class of 2021. So this is really good news. Now, it's not completely surprising given the news that we hear each and every day, which is that, just as you said, employers are really in a position of a lack of talent, or what they see as a lack of talent. However, I can also tell you that I think in many of these instances, employers are being too selective. So this is part of what's happening in the world at large. We still have positions that have hundreds of applicants. And so it's not easy to find a job. It's still very challenging to find a job. And that's true for a recent college graduate. So I don't want anyone to get the impression that because the labor market has more positions open today than we have in a very long time, it doesn't mean finding a job is still easy. And I would also say that employers are still being really selective. So they're actually deselecting people as opposed to figuring out how they can include people.
Yikes!
And so we find a lot of our employers are rethinking their entire hiring process to figure out how to be more inclusive in the process as opposed to exclusive in their process.
So they're rebuilding then. Many employers, to what you're saying, are rebuilding their entire hiring foundation in order to open themselves up to more people that can do the work, right?
That's right. Yeah, Find the talent. And the one thing I would add there, which you might find interesting, is that I can give you a very clear example, and that would be GPA. So in our research, what we found is that the screening by GPA has gone down dramatically in the last 3 years. So about 3 years ago, our college recruiters that were going on campus were telling us that it's about 75% of them screened applicants by GPA. That has gone down to our latest survey this year to 46%. So that's what I mean by rethinking the process.
Well, that's refreshing, right? And you know, this is the conversation that we have a lot of time in this podcast, is about the college degree in general, all right? And this, I'm sure this comes up too, you know, where people are, you know, there's a question of value on the college degree. There's a question of whether folks need that degree to get a job. Do you know, there's many employers that are saying, hey, look, we are not going to require a college degree anymore to hire people. And so you get these folks with credentials or credential stacking that might be able to get a job now when they wouldn't have before. Or at least I do, and many of us work within higher education, where we've doubled down on the fact that a degree is worthwhile for most students. What is your constituency saying, your members, the people you serve, about the value of a college degree and its relevance in the workforce?
Yeah, absolutely. A college degree is still worth something. I mean, all the statistics would point at it. I think what we're really talking about is a debt issue in many cases. But in general, a college student from the class of 2021 who graduated, the average student earned about $55,000 coming out of school. Someone with a high school education, someone who did not graduate college, generally is not going to be making that much money. And that is on whole. So that's across the United States. That changes, of course, regionally. It changes by degree. It changes by field and industry. So if I'm an engineering student, I'm probably going to be earning more than that. If I'm on the West Coast, my salary is probably going to go up to closer to $62,000 as an average salary. So the return in terms of pure salary actually still has a really good return on investment. Mm.
Love to hear that. And you know, oh God, it's a crazy conversation about college degree relevance. And I always wonder, who is the person that's telling their kid not to go to college and instead go, you know, a different path? And I wonder how that conversation comes out, because it's not coming out of my mouth with my kids. They're going to go to college just in case they might need it. I'll figure out how to pay for it. You know, and you wonder with equity gaps, you know, we're talking about lower economic populations, access to college, you know, access to education. And then at the same time, there's a conversation going on the side that college may not be worth it. And you wonder, what is the message that we're sending to be more inclusive when we're saying you may not even need it? It's a really confusing conversation to have when you're talking to college students. What do you think about that?
I would agree with you. And one of the advantages certainly to a college degree is lifelong career management, which if intentionally driven through the curriculum and through the college experience, really gives that student an advantage in the end. And so it's easy, I shouldn't say it's easy, but you could certainly go and get a certificate, a badge, go through a boot camp, et cetera, and you're going to learn a specific skill or a specific responsibility that you will be able to do very well. But I would say that's probably going to take you on a different path in terms of your entire trajectory and career than a student who graduates with a college degree may have. And so I think a student with a college degree has a more diverse set of skills to be able to manage a lifetime of career choices.
100%.
Our audience agrees. What about, Sean, how employers are hiring? Meaning, are we in person? Are we not in person? Are we going to be hybrid, all online, some online, in the city, all over the world? I mean, you know, there's just been a change in how and change in two things, right? How we expect as workers to experience work moving forward after years of working, many of us years of working from home, and it's harder to take something away than it is to give it, right? COVID gave a lot of us a work from home situation. And, you know, I think higher ed in particular is one of those industries where we have students, many of the institutions have students on ground. So you want to be able to say, everybody needs to come back to serve the students. But the expectations of the workers have changed. Now you get into Fortune 500 companies, many of which that, or small companies, many of which that sell goods online, and you go, where do these people need to work? So what is the job outlook when it comes to in-person, hybrid, and remote, and how employers are thinking about their workforce?
Yeah, I have some answers for you, and I have a feeling it's going to make our higher ed colleagues a little jealous. So we know from our research that new college graduates, meaning from the class of 2022, when we surveyed our employers on where their graduates, the new hires, are going to work, we found that 40% of them are going to work in a hybrid mixed environment. 18% are going to be fully remote. So that's a clear 58% of new college graduates will be working either hybrid or fully remote in their positions.
Attention.
I'm just going to double down. We're just make sure everybody's paying attention for you. Say that 58% with expectations outside of on just coming to work every day.
That's right. And what's interesting about this is that we know that from the surveying of college students themselves, that they are looking forward to actually going in the office and having some face-to-face time. And employers are recognizing this, and they do see value in someone starting their career, having them on site. So that's why so many companies are moving towards this hybrid mode. And so many companies are at least starting their employees and new hires in the in-person, even though the full company may not be still at that 42% in person, because they know that the college graduate needs just a little bit more than those that have been in the company prior. And this is also driven by various industries, right? So we find that some industries are going back in person in greater numbers than others are. So if I'm like an accountant, as an example, I'm probably gonna be in a hybrid mode. And they're probably at this point not going to require me to be fully in person. If I'm working in engineering services or in the construction industry, there's a greater likelihood that I'm going to be in person. But for many positions, consulting, financial services, et cetera, being a hybrid works really well.
The vision of Unmuddle for the future is that the high cost, rigidity, and uncertain reward of pursuing higher education would be replaced with an economical, transparent, infinitely adjustable sequence of lifelong learning stints in which the employer, college, and learner are in constant communication about current needs, and the system can respond quickly to each. Employers need highly qualified and diverse talent to grow. Unmuddle is a marketplace that will help you with workforce and upskilling needs. To learn more, go to unmuddle.com/employers. Why do you think, do you think that's related to the projections that you guys have all put, for, you know, the Job Outlook 2022 spring update? Because the number of hiring, the percent of hiring of college graduates has gone up pretty significantly over the last 10 years. It's the bar chart that you have on your website. The recruiting year, and then it has hiring projections for spring, like at 31%, fall at 26%, which is sometimes as much as 10, 15, 20% higher than previous years. You think that's because the employers open up to differing hiring methodologies and people are looking for those, or is it something else?
I think there are a number of things going on pre-COVID. So, well, let me start with this. We are the only place that collects the first destination survey of college students. And so college and universities are doing the first destination survey, which measures where did students land within 6 months of graduation. Once they've done that, we take the data and then we compile it and see what's really happening in the marketplace for college graduates in aggregate form. So that's how we can understand how much students are being paid. That's how we can understand how many are working full-time jobs or going on to graduate school, et cetera, as a nation. And in 2019, so this is pre-COVID, we had the largest number of students going into full-time employment that we had in the history of the survey. It was good. And so we were really headed in a positive direction as more and more schools were thinking about this accountability and thinking about the career trajectory of their students and their return back to the institution for doing so. When we got to the class of 2020, there was a drop because that was the first summer of COVID. And there was a full-time placement drop of about 5%. So it was significant. It was statistically significant for that class. Now, we believe that if we were to do that first destination survey within a year of graduation, most of those students would have been placed because the economy really started to turn around at the beginning of 2021. When you go the next step and you think about recruitment and what the employers are doing or not doing, they're telling us that the virtual space has opened up doors like never before. They are able to reach students they hadn't been able to reach before, and particularly students of color and other historically marginalized groups. And so this has been really good for them. And we also know from our surveying, and this is very interesting, that certain historically marginalized groups, and I'll give you an example of Black students in this case, find that their experiences are much better or would be much better in the virtual recruiting space than it would be in the in-person space. And that's whether or not the student had ever participated in in-person recruiting activities before. So it tells you a little bit something about the psyche of the students. Whereas white students, as an example, really did not, there wasn't a variable difference. So it was like 50% of the white students, they didn't really care. It could be in-person, it could be virtual. They didn't necessarily think that they would learn more in the virtual. Whereas with Black students, it was up to 75% that believed that they would learn more and have a better experience in the virtual world. So it tells you then that back and forth between the candidate and the employer a little bit about what's happening in this virtual space.
That's fascinating, actually. That's really fascinating. Not actually, I'm not saying that I wasn't expecting it to be fascinating, but it really is. And one other area, you touched on it briefly before, was when we were talking about skills and we were talking about self-perception versus employer perception. On your website, you have a table and it shows by skill where students have rated themselves, so to speak, and how an employer has rated their proficiency, a student rating their own proficiency and an employer rating their own proficiency. Really interesting that leadership, professionalism, and like self-development were the areas where students rated themselves much higher than the employer. Is that a reflection of how we're teaching in colleges and universities, that we're not preparing students for leadership or to be professional? Or is it something related to cultural backgrounds or circumstances that don't bring out those leaders and, you know, and that level of professionalism till later in life? Do you guys get into how do you address those gaps?
Yeah, I think one of the answers here is that there's a misunderstanding of what it means to be proficient in those areas. So you certainly can give a student a definition, but unless they've lived it, unless they've seen it through the recruiter's eyes or a company's eyes, they don't always make the connections in the same way as that recruiter or hiring manager would. So to them, leadership may mean one thing, but to the hiring manager, it means something very different. So for me, it's like, you know, through the college experience, whether it's in coursework or it's in extracurricular activities, leadership activities, a student may have on campus, part-time jobs, work study, et cetera, that if we were to be a little bit more deliberate in these conversations with students about what they're getting out of these experiences, and they were able to identify, we'll continue on with the leadership example, what they did in those experiences that represent leadership that can be translated into the work environment, they would be better off and the employer would be better off because there would be an equal translation.
Yeah, good point. You guys have a lot of great information on your website. I got to be honest. I've visited a couple of times, but I mean, you've got a lot of new stuff on there. Big colorful charts that really illustrate perceptions, the job outlooks, and I encourage everybody to hit it. You know, Sean, we like to ask our guests the same ending two questions at the end of every episode. Number one, what didn't we say about NACE today that you'd like to bring up? Anything that you have going on, events, white papers you have coming out, anything at all, or if you just want to talk about work that you're doing that we didn't get a chance to talk about. And then two, what do you see as the future of higher education?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have our big conference coming up, which we're really excited about. We'll be back in person for the very first time here, June 7th to 9th. And that is, thanks. We're pretty excited. We'll be in Portland and Oregon. And we'll be bringing together these Career Center folks, career development professionals, along with these employers to have the kinds of conversations that we're having here, to talk about how we create more outcomes for more people. And that's really what it's about at the end of the day and what we're striving for. And that equity is really important. And one of the things that we have learned over and over and over again in our research over the last 2 years is that all experiences have not been created equal for students, and the outcomes additionally are not equal. So one of the examples I would give you are that internship experiences are not created equal. And in our mind, internship experiences are critically important to a student's first job. We know from our surveying that employers value internship experience as the number one differentiator between candidates.
Attention.
It's really important. And they want students who have either internship experiences with them. They want students who have internship experiences with others in the same industry. And they want students who can demonstrate leadership and other work experiences, practical experience. That's really important. Here's why it's important. Because we have found in our research that internships aren't created equal for all students. What I mean by that is that Black students, Hispanic students, women are all disproportionately represented as a proportion of paid internships in the US. Yikes. They are overrepresented as a number of unpaid interns and never intern. I'd like to give you two more reasons why this is important. We know that a student who has a paid internship will have on average 32% more job offers than a student who had an unpaid internship, and 75% more job offers than a student who never interned.
What?
We also know, one more tidbit, and this one's really important. We know that a student who has a paid internship upon graduation will receive a starting salary that is $10,000 to $15,000 and sometimes $20,000 greater in their first full-time job than a student that either had an unpaid internship or never interned at all. Wow. So for me, as higher ed, and this leads to, this future of higher ed question, which is we really need to think about students as individuals, and we need to be tracking experiences for all students at all levels to understand what is happening in their experience and how we can strengthen their experience so that they have equitable outcomes. And we're laser focused on that right now.
Ooh, I like a laser focus. You heard it from Sean, guys. More students, more outcomes, more opportunity, more jobs. We in higher ed, we've got to do the hard work of preparing our students for the workforce, not just teaching them what we want or what we think they need to learn. It has to have a pathway to a job. That's why, and Sean, you know this, that's why so many students are bringing up ROI, return on investment, and why there's so many people that are saying, well, education's not a real investment. It's not like you put money in and you make money on your money. But that's not technically true, because you can make money over time on yourself. It's a self-investment. Anyway, I digress, but point being is when we invest in an infrastructure to serve more people, we're gonna have better outcomes, and our employers are gonna be hiring more folks, which helps the economy and so on. And we really thank you for the work you're doing at NACE, Sean, to bring light on what's missing, what's going well, and what needs to happen next. And I know you probably have a great team of people around you that help produce all this data.
Absolutely. We have a full research team and programmatic team, and we couldn't do any of the work without all of our members who help us to execute on all of this research, which is just helps all of us, right? Both yep. As institutions, but also the public at large, to understand what's really happening with higher education outcomes, as well as what's happening generally in the world at large.
Well, you heard it here, ladies and gents. His name is Sean VanderZeel, and he's executive director at the National Association of Colleges and Employers, better known as NACE. Sean, thank you for coming on the EdUp Experience today.
I had a great experience. Thanks so much, Joe.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've just EdUpped. Employers use UnModel to source talent directly from community colleges with a click of a button to commission needed training to develop existing talent. Highly qualified and diverse talent is absolutely necessary to grow in today's workforce. Try your free subscription today at unmuddle.com/employers.